You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with the Writer, readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've been listening to Hot Texas by the Hot Texas Swing Band, and who's on tonight?
Oh, we're excited. From Denver, we have author Jeff Richard. Let me make sure I have the name right there, Jeff. Author Jeff Richards with us tonight, and we're going to be talking about his memoir, Nothing Left to Lose, or How Not to Start a Commune. Welcome, Jeff.
You got it right.
And I said you were joining us from Denver. Is that where you are tonight?
Denver, Colorado.
Yeah.
Okay. I've lived here for 2 years, and before that, I lived in Tacoma Park, Maryland.
Yeah. Well, we're excited to talk about this memoir. Jim's going to just kick us off with a little bit of a bio, and then I think that you have something that you want to share. So, Jim, why don't you go ahead and get us started?
Jeff Richards has worked as a teacher, a dishwasher, door-to-door salesman, farm worker, wilderness counselor, newspaper carrier, radio reporter, and busboy. He has hitchhiked across the country 5 times. An accomplished author of fiction, short stories, cowboy poetry, and essays. His newest title, Nothing Left to Lose, or How Not to Start a Commune. It debuts in April 2025, which is next month.
Yeah. And Jeff has something he wants to share. Go ahead, Jeff.
It's your turn.
Okay. I have this little review that was written in 2024, and I don't know how he got it, but it's about my novel, and it's the editor of the Independent Book Review. All your favorite 70s stereotypes come to life in this laugh-out-loud hippie memoir. Memoirs can be about nothing and everything, or they can be nothing left to lose. One person's story that represents so many people's stories. How could author Jeff Richards possibly have done all of what we imagine the 70s counterculture movement to do? Drugs, sex, road trips, communes, you name it, Jeff Richards has done it. Some memoirs are about the content. Some are about the prose. This is both. I didn't want to put a book with a 2025 release date in my best reading of 2024 list, but once I finished Nothing Left to Lose, I had no choice. Put this on your radar now before it floors out of town.
What a great review. And he's right on.
Right.
Well, who wrote the review again?
Yeah, who wrote that again?
It's Independent Book Review. It's okay. The editor. I don't have his name right here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great review. And to our readers, our listeners, and our watchers, and our readers out there, that is a very, very accurate description of this really fun book to read.
Yeah, I especially like to emphasize the laugh out loud part because it's supposed to be humorous.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And a lot of the humor actually comes when you read it out loud and you try to imagine some of what is going on. And we're going to talk about all of that in just right. a moment. But let's start just to get to know you a little bit, Jeff. Let's see. When did you start writing?
I come from a writing family. My sister is a writer. She's published, more books than I have. My nephew is also a writer. My dad was a journalist, and he worked for the Cincinnati Post for a while, and also he worked in Toledo, Ohio, writing radio plays. And his radio play, the one that I remember, is called Captain Reckless. And play like The Shadow or something
yeah.
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was before the war. And I guess my first experience as a writer is when I had this teacher who was giving me a spelling test. And at the end of each word I spelled, I was supposed to write a sentence. And he told me, he looked it over, and I didn't get all the spelling correct, but he thought my sentences were very creative and I should be a writer. And it sort of stuck with me then. Mm-hmm. And there's other times as well. When I went to college, I was in this writing class, and we had a guest writer who happened to be Eudora Welty. And she said, well, the teacher pointed me out and said that I actually rewrote my story. I guess a lot of the students didn't. And he said, that's very good. I think that's what you have to do. And Eudora Welty nodded her head. Yes, mm-hmm. that's what you have to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think you were a teacher. Was this George Washington University? Were you taught?
Yes, I was.
Yeah,
I taught.
Go ahead. What did you teach?
I taught, well, English, creative yeah. writing. I did a lot of, you know, freshman teaching.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And that's cool.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I taught a lot of colleges. Yeah. George Mason, Community College.
To get back to the book, so when did you start working on this, Jeff?
2017. I started with, my buddy in there, if you show the book again.
Yes, I'm happy to.
The guy with the fuzzy hair there, that's Rick Sager. In 2017, unfortunately, he died of a disease that is very much like, what is it called?
Agent Orange?
People in Vietnam died of. Mm-hmm. It's caused by insecticide. Mm-hmm. You know what? I forget what it was called, but anyway. Yeah,
Agent Orange? Was it
Agent Orange? Right. The only way they were able to figure out what he had is the studies they did on soldiers. And where he lived, right above him on a hill, was a apple orchard. And they sprayed that apple orchard all the time. And, you know, he lived there for 20 years or something like that. And eventually got into the groundwater and a cistern. And it did him in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
That's what my initial impetus was in writing this book. The other thing is we were just beginning the Trump era. And I saw a little comparison between what was happening in the Trump era and what happened in the 60s. And it's, you know, it's a sort of a little different in the Trump era than it was in the 60s. Like, we were all trying to get together and have love and peace and all that in the 60s. And I don't think that's happening either in 2017 or now.
Right.
It's not about getting together.
No. Who else is on the cover? Since I'm holding up the book, do you want to introduce the other characters on the cover?
There's Rick at the end.
Right.
Then comes his sister, Anne, or Pie in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes myself, and JB is the final person.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, throughout the book, trying to romance Anne. But if you look at the cover, I don't know if you can see, if you look at her, you can see where her mind's at. She's more interested in JB. They end up getting married.
Yeah. I love the starry background to the book cover.
Oh, great. Yeah, well, that has something to do with the ending.
Mm-hmm. We're crediting her. We're crediting Anne with the cover, aren't we?
Right. She's behind the cover, and she's one of the people in the book that you still keep in touch with and know, right? Still.
Yeah, she has. As I mentioned in the story, I think I do. She was interested in starting a co-op, and that's exactly what she did.
Yeah.
In Patagonia, Arizona.
Yeah, Patagonia. Yeah, where we've been.
We've been to Patagonia.
You've been to Patagonia.
Did you need any food? Well, we were visiting with family that were there, and I don't really. I remember a wonderful 4th of July parade that went, you know, through town, but I don't remember actually going into any businesses there.
Well,
this was quite a while ago, 30 years ago, probably.
She had the only grocery store within 30 miles, so.
Yeah. How fun. We are going to step away for just a moment, and Jeff, when we come back, we're going to now get into an in-depth look. Beginning an in-depth look of the book. But before we do, we would like to have a moment to hear from our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. Are you a writer? If you are, find out what they can do for you. And when we come back, we will be talking in greater detail with author Jeff Richards about his book, Nothing Left to Lose or How Not to Start a Commune. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking to Jeff Richards about his book, Nothing Else to Lose.
Nothing Left to Lose.
Nothing Left to Lose. Or How Not to Start a Commune.
Right.
It's a catchy title.
It is.
So, Jeff, how does the title, while we're talking about that title, tell us a little bit about how that title informs the book.
Okay, I guess what I should mention is where it comes from.
Yeah.
The Nothing Left to Lose part comes from a song that Janis Joplin made famous. Bobby McGee, I think it is.
Yeah.
But the line is, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Actually, the song was written by Chris Christopherson. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if you're a hippie, the sort of idea is to have complete freedom from everything, responsibility turn on, tune in, and drop out, like Timothy Leary said. But if you do that, you lose your connection with other people in the world. You can't totally be free. You always have to have, you know, if you want to have a relationship with another person, you give up a little bit of your freedom. So that's where that part of the book comes from. And how not to start a commune is the fact that we attempt to start a commune in a very haphazard way. We just graduated from college, so we weren't exactly informed on how to start a commune. They never had a course in that. And our attempts sort of failed, and we sort of came to the realization that a commune wasn't exactly what we wanted. Too much commitment. Hard enough having a family, but to have five or six family with dozens of kids, not for me.
That's
kind of interesting. Yeah,
you want to ask about something from our list?
You know, we had talked the other night, and you had so many facts from the 60s, and that's so long ago, you know, that's 60 some years ago. And right. We kind of asked, did you keep a diary or something so you could keep track of what happened way back when?
You want me to?
Did you have a diary? I didn't, you know, did you keep track of some of those events from days gone by? Because you mentioned so many of them.
The details.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't quite hear you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're just asking the details that you cover in this book, from what people were wearing, you know, the bell bottom, orange bell bottoms with, you know, ripped out knees. I mean, you give us such detail of this time period. We were curious how you kept track, or how were you able to remember such detail, which just makes the book so readable.
I remembered it and I researched it. One of the great things about, you know, one of the reasons I started writing in 2015 is that, well, I'd been writing before, short stories and stuff. But as soon as I discovered the internet and especially Wikipedia, I really could fill in all the gaps of things that I didn't remember exactly. And, you know, filling in the gaps I had helped me with the recall part. So, you know, it was, by now I've done four novels or four books, and it was pretty easy doing that, filling in the gaps. Plus, I had a hippie dictionary.
Oh, that's cool.
It was that thick. And what, so.
What were the years? Particularly the years that you were developing the commune and traveling?
What years?
Yeah.
Well, in the novel starts off in college, where I do the first thing I turn on. And then after college, most of my friends were a year behind me. After college, I went home and worked for a year. And then this was 68 that I graduated. And 69, I went home and spent a year working. And then at the end of 69, we all moved out to Colorado in search of a commune in the Rocky Mountains. But if in order to get a commune together, you have to have some money. I was the only one with money. So we decided we went up to the mountains and found a place that looked pretty good. But the only problem, it didn't have its own access road. So we had to rent it from the guy next door. And also it didn't have any electricity, water, or anything else. So we could buy the place. It was maybe 10 acres. And we could buy the place, but then all our money would be gone and we couldn't put in the water or anything. And it was in the mountains. It was about 30 miles from any place where we could get a job to make more money. So we decided to move down to a crash pad and a place to live in Denver, Colorado. Stayed there for a while. Then Rick and I moved to Boulder, then up to Nederland, Colorado. But that's enough detail. We just kept going, moving around, and doing a lot of hitchhiking, going to demonstrations. Once we went to Mexico, and spent the last part of the novel we spent in California, hitchhiking back and forth.
I'd like to just personally say, you may be of an age that this is almost, history. This is your grandparents talk about these years, or if you're very young, it might even be great grandparents now, or, you may have an older coworker that talks about things in the 70s and you kind of roll your eyes and go, I have no clue what any of that is about. This book will help you understand the experiences that so many of us in one way or another, one part or another, had during these, during these years. And also just makes for very enjoyable reading. I mean, these characters, which we'll talk about in a little greater detail in a moment, these characters just keep it, you keep turning those pages because you wonder what that crazy, character is going to do next.
Right. Well, I'm 80.
You're 80.
So
okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm ancient.
That was a long time ago. So, it's kind of. We were talking and we're thinking that, for a lot of folks, they hadn't been born.
Yeah.
It had been so many years since even somebody 50 years old today.
Exactly.
Comprehend.
So. Exactly. So, right. What was it, Jeff, about the concept of a commune that just grabbed you guys? It became the aim. It became the goal. What was it about it?
In a way, I covered that. But the other thing is, I sort of like the idea. Well, that's what everybody was doing, number one. And number two, I sort of like the idea of living with like-minded people in a big group. Mm-hmm. And you needed a little bit of money to do that, and we didn't have that. I just like the idea.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I like the idea. I sort of think I didn't like the idea too at the same time. Because I liked, like I said before, having one family with, the wife and kids actually seemed like enough in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like the idea of sharing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That's about it.
A lot of people go, I know a lot of folks, particularly, if you were a student, you spent 12 years in high school, up to high school, and then you spent another 4 or 5 years in college. And you probably, as far as you were concerned, you were probably pretty, it was pretty intense living for you. So you're probably thinking, well, maybe I could do is take a little time off before I really have to spend the next 4 years of my life working at something. So maybe I'll travel. And some people did.
Yeah.
And people like you started a commune. So it's just kind of, you back off from what the life path is for a while. And say, okay, we're going to do something different. I know a lot of the folks that you knew, eventually it seemed like one by one, they started following a more traditional path.
Right.
They went on the master's degrees. They got, they started jobs. I guess career patterns. Mm-hmm. Some of my right. stuff got married, so.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I visited a commune in New Buffalo in Taos, New Mexico. And that's sort of like what turned me off of communes, because they were living in these huts, adobe huts, and there's no water or electricity or anything like that. And, you know, they farmed and everything, and their farms were fine. And but, you know, I don't think I wanted to live like that. And mm-hmm. I've been back to Taos since mm-hmm. then, and New Buffalo, which is a really famous commune back in the day. And I've been back there, and some of the same people are there, but they're not living in a commune. They're living as a family by themselves, and right. and their friends are still around, but they're not living the communal life.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it works for many people. You have mm-hmm. to give up almost too much freedom to live in a commune.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, why not talk about hitchhiking?
Hitchhiking.
Yeah, because we talked the other night about hitchhiking. You know, in those days, you could go all over the country. People would give you rides. It really wasn't too much of a problem getting the ride. Right. Once in a while, you run into somebody who's kind of strange or different, but it was safe. It was a great way to travel, both for guys and for girls. You kind of found it that way, right?
Back in my day, the hitchhiking was much easier because there were a lot of like-minded people on the road, and so I'd get picked up by a fellow hippie, I guess you could call him. We didn't like to call them hippies. We were called freaks. That was the name we liked. Yeah.
Well, what were...
But I was going to... Oh, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, how would you say hitchhiking differs now, today, from then?
I don't... Since I haven't hitchhiked in about 50 years, I don't know. But I hear it's much harder.
Yeah.
Even back then, I would have never hitchhiked alone.
Yeah. Yeah, you always had a buddy. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a buddy with me.
Yeah.
Or maybe three people. In the last chapter, go ahead.
You had a lot of very interesting experiences with very interesting people in the years that you shared apartment living. I would wonder if you could share an experience or two. I'd love you to talk about the July 20th moon landing, for instance, as one.
Well, to be honest, there wasn't much to it except hooking it up. My friend Rick, before he graduated, he originally wanted to be an astronomy major, but he decided, you know, that it was some of the courses he had problems with. So he knew a lot about, you know, astronomy and what's happening up in the sky. And there's a lot of that in the book, too, him describing this to me. And he's also a Buddhist, so that helps, I guess. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when the moon landing happened, you know, we saw the whole thing, and then we went outside, and I think it was pretty close to a full moon, and it was directly above us. So he pointed to where the moon landing actually was.
Yeah.
So that was my experience. We were lucky we even had a TV.
Right.
You know, back then, and you bring it out in the book, we had a draft, and all men had to plan their lives around that 2-year stint. And everybody was always concerned, well, when my draft number was going to come up, or when it's going to be, am I going to be called up? Can I take enough courses to keep from being called up, you know, when you're in college? Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I went to Denison University in Ohio, and about 2 months before I graduated, We were ordered by the administration, well, and the administration was ordered by the government to send us to a get our physicals. And the place we went was in Newark, Ohio. And the first thing we walk in, and they tell us to, you know, take off our shirts. They line us, and then they line us up, and they tell us to drop trowel, which we did. And the doctors came down the line, first in the front, then in the back. And I won't tell you what they did when they came through the back. It was ridiculous.
It's in the book.
Yeah.
Read the book.
You want me to? I'll tell you if you want to hear it.
No, okay.
That's a teaser for read the book.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
but if you had any problems, they had magic markers, and they would, you know, different mark color magic markers, and they'd mark you, your chest with it. So I had a lot of marks on there, both front. The front was okay. The back wasn't. I also had flat feet. That I got a marker for that. Yeah. And
but that didn't disqualify you, did it? The flat feet didn't disqualify you, though, did it?
Right.
I heard in years going by that was a disqualification. It's a disqualification characteristic. But you actually had a separated shoulder.
Well, yeah, I played football in high school, and I dislocated my shoulder twice, and during playing football, and actually I dislocated it maybe seven times total, and the last time I was riding a wave in the ocean, and I dislocated it there, and I went back to each one of the doctors. I was advised to do this by the Quakers. They tried to get us out of the draft. Mm-hmm. They helped us. And I had about seven letters. And the next thing after, you know, we were in this line, the next thing they had us do was go to a room where we took a test, which I flunked. It was for people who are illiterate, I flunked it. It was just a picture where you match one thing with another.
Right.
If you, like a tool with, how do you use that tool?
Yeah.
And since I'm not mechanically inclined, I flunked it. And then after that, we went to get to a psychiatrist, and I passed that test, unfortunately, but finally, I went to a doctor and handed over those letters, and immediately they sent me to the Group W bench, where all the rejects were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you looked around the room and everybody looked depressed, but everybody in the Group W bench were smiling. I feel so really guilty about that in a way.
Well, you do. I went through the same thing you did, as we were talking before. You know, that test you were talking about, I didn't comment on it the other night, but commented on now. I thought that was a really stupid test. And if you hadn't had a background to the use tools, or particularly the type of tools in some sort of application, you would not have done well on that test.
And right.
I couldn't have believed that they were giving us for a test to see whether or not you qualified for anything.
All right.
We're going to step away again, Jeff, for just a moment. And we are going to hear a word from another of our sponsors. It's actually the business that Jim and I have, outwestshop.com. And when we come back, we are going to pick up with more interesting topics about the events and the people in this book. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. we round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Rider. We're talking with Jeff Richards about his book. You know, Jeff, we were just talking, Bobby and I were during the break here, and did you want to talk about the anti-war marches there in Washington? I know you took part to some degree in a couple of them.
Yeah, I went. I think we went to three or four marches, or at least that. And each march that I went to got worse and worse. The police got more and more involved. Until the final march, they were just tossing people into their vans, or they actually had buses, and hauling them off to, well, they kept them, this particular march, they kept them in the football stadium. And fortunately, I wasn't one of those people. But anyway, the march that I sort of enjoyed is not the word, but the march that I got the most feeling out of was the March for Death. And it started off at the memorial at Arlington Cemetery, where all the veterans are buried. And it went down across the Memorial Bridge, past the White House, where each person had a name of a soldier who died in Vietnam, and they yelled out that name. And I just wanted to read you a little, it's a paragraph, about what happened at the end of that march, what we saw. I have to take off my glasses to read. Usually it's the other way around.
You're right.
On the way home, many hours later, I saw a middle-aged woman leaning against a tree, a fur hat askew on her head, a blue cotton coat with big blue buttons open to the wind. She was shivering, but I didn't think it was from the cold air. Beside her was a sign that showed the photograph of a young man in an army uniform, and below it the caption, "My son was killed in Vietnam. What for, America?" I pointed her out to Robin, and Robin thought we should comfort her. But as soon as a woman saw us heading in her direction, she narrowed her eyes and gave us such a nasty look that we turned away.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Mm-hmm. That's very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, please. When I think of that, it brings tears to my eyes.
Because, I can imagine. You know,
she was really suffering.
Yeah.
Losing her son.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That was a famous march, as I remember. Boy, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I actually published that story separately, too, as a story.
As a story.
Very good.
Yeah, I picked things from here and there. Yeah. Like my previous book, there's a story in it that is basically, I just took it away and rewrote it a little bit, and it's the last chapter in the novel.
Okay.
And another, the description at the beginning of the book I took from another story as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of these people. Let's talk about characters. One of the things that that you say is this memoir is character driven. And if you wouldn't mind explaining this a little bit to us in terms of some of the characters, and we're happy to call out a name, Jeff, and you tell us a little something about that person. Maybe there's somebody you'd like to just start with and pick a character and just tell us a little something about him or her.
Would you like to do it with a character? How about Rick?
Yeah, start with Rick.
Perfect.
Yeah.
This is a story about Rick and me when at the end of the novel, I meant to pull it up when we were hitchhiking, but we went to Mendocino, like I said. Here it is. Mendocino.
Yeah. California, here we come.
Okay, and down here, let's see, at the very edge, there's a beach right down there. Oh, you can't see that.
It's okay.
Beach down
there. Yeah, we got it.
Yeah, we see it.
And I don't know if you remember, but there are cliffs surrounding Mendocino, and then there's this little beach, and that's where we stayed on the beach. And while we were staying there, Rick and I hooked up with some women of the opposite sex or whatever, and I won't go into detail about that.
But, read the book.
But the funny things that happened there is that we were down on the beach one day, and we climbed up these long stairs to the cliff. And at the top of the cliff, there was a house that wasn't there the night before. And it was a drugstore. And in front of the drugstore, there was a sign that said, three scoops of ice cream, 15 cents. So we got all excited because at least we had 15 cents. So we went up the stairs, Rick first, and opened the door, and he fell down onto the ground from there.
Oh.
It was a false front for a movie set.
Oh.
Welcome to California.
Yeah, it was summer of 42. I don't know if you heard of that
movie. Oh, yeah.
And they...
Never 42. That's where they filmed that in Mendocino?
Yeah. They came down to talk to us and said, offered us, you know, extra parts. But they said there was one requirement. We had to cut our hair. So they didn't get anything from us. And the other thing is Ronald Reagan was governor back then.
Yeah.
And he was giving away food to all the hippies or to anybody who wanted it. At these various places. There's a town nearby called Fort Bragg that we drove there and we got food and brought it back. So thanks to Ronald Reagan, we had plenty of food.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's strange.
Tell us about, she's a minor character, but oh my goodness, every scene she's in, you just can't stop reading. Gina.
She called herself Gina Gina the Euglena. A Euglena is a one-celled animal. She was basically all drugged out. At least she said she was. She carried around these pills, multicolored pills in her hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was when we were living in Denver. And, Rick messed around with her, and he got the clap from her. And we found out that she was actually from a pretty well-to-do family in Memphis, I think it was. And she just gone off the edge. And she ended up, you know, when Rick found out his problem, she ended up on the couch in the living room, and she set fire to the couch. And that was the end of Gina.
The purple
she didn't
couch.
Kill herself.
No.
She just disappeared.
Yeah.
Oh, she also stole my record collection.
Yeah,
and my record player.
Yes, your Philco. And she told you all that at one point, I think she'd been in rehab. And who did she meet there but James Taylor?
Where did she what?
She met James Taylor in rehab.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
he was in rehab with...
There's a lot of characters in your book.
Carly Simon.
Okay.
Both
and
of them.
There's a lot of characters in your book. Do you ever cross paths with any of them? Are some of them still around?
Yeah, actually a lot. Sadly, JB died of cancer, and I told you about Rick, but Pi's still around, and I'm still around, at least I think. And let's see, Nat Koenig, who was the guy that turned us on at the beginning of the novel, he runs a Woodstock, the Woodstock Festival Museum in Woodstock, New York. Good. And Rich, or Baby Huey, he lives near where his family lives, and I'm in contact with him. Did I say where? I told you where Pi was is.
Yes. And, but
there's this Bill Barber. He's a sort of a minor character. He lives in Boone, North Carolina, where he's a photographer. And there's only one person who still lives here, and that's Barry Roseman. And I mention him only in passing. He actually went pretty the straight way. He got a CO, a conscientious objector, and worked here for a couple of years in, I think it was called the AmeriCorps. Then he went to college. He went to graduate school at the University of Chicago, got a law degree, and spent the rest of his career in Denver.
Wow.
And just retired a couple of years ago.
I'm looking at our time, and oh my goodness, we're almost out. So tell us, where can people find you, follow you, get the book and such? Where do they go?
Jeff Richards, author.com.
Okay. Jim has a quote. Yeah. And where else?
Where else?
Yeah. Is there any?
The books themselves.
Sure.
Amazon.
Uh-huh. And it's and also.
Hopefully you're going to hold on to some of my books.
Well, it's also available through the Out West Shop affiliate page at bookshop.org, and you can find us right there, and you can get it that way. And Jim has a quote. Go ahead and do your quote, honey.
We'll take this quote out of the book, Jeff. Our character, Kevin, he's telling one of these jokes, and the joke goes like this. Nixon, Kissinger, Billy Graham, and a hippie are in an airplane. The pilot croaks. They need the parachute to safety. There are only three parachutes. Nixon grabs one, saying, "I am the President of the United States and the people need me," and he jumps out. Kissinger grabs one, saying, "I'm the world's smartest man and advisor to the President. The people need me." He jumps out. Then Billy Graham says to the hippie, "Go ahead, my son. You can take the last parachute." And the hippie says, "Don't worry, Reverend. There's two left. The world's smartest man just grabbed my knapsack."
That's a good one.
And it's from this book.
Right.
Well, Jeff, we want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. We just had a wonderful time, and we wish you much success as the book hits the newsstands and gets out there in April.
Right.
We want to thank Sam Hassan and LA Talk Radio and our sponsors, Clicks by Madison and the Blue Cottage Agency and Out West Shop. Next week, we kick off the month of April, as we always do, with two guests. Henry Park joins us. He is the film editor for True West Magazine and an author, and he will be joined by a good friend of ours we have known for a very long time, and she is now writing under a new name, and she is writing a cozy mystery. We will be with our friend, we know her as Margaret Brownlee, but to our audience next week, you'll be meeting Kate Damon and her book, Jury Duty is Murder. And that's next week. You got anything else?
And I just wanted to say thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Jeff. We appreciated you, too.
This was so much fun.
It was.
This was so much fun.
Until
we meet again.
As we always say.
Until we meet again.
It's a great day out west.
Keep writing, and we'll keep reading.
I will.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.